It's outrageously irresponsible. The science is very clear. The study she's referred to has been discredited many times. There is absolutely no truth in that argument.
From 1994, we added 8 vaccines to our schedule. There are vaccines like flu, rotavirus, varicella that have only been picked up by 2 or 3 of the other 30 countries. So what do they know that we don't? Why aren't they picking up vaccines that have been around for 15 years? And why are their autism rates 1 in 1,000, 1 in 1,500, 1 in 2,000? It doesn't take a brain surgeon or an ER doctor to figure out there might be a correlation.
We don't want to narrow...
Ryan, I feel like Wyatt Earp. Are you young enough, old enough to remember Wyatt Earp?
Oh, yes.
The gunman. I got a gun in my right hip, which is smoking hot, pointed at Deb Matthews. I got a gun in my left hip, pointed at Health Canada, and we are ready to rock and roll. 3 new shots for your kids. Mandatory this fall, folks. It's a story we're going to get to in our next half hour. Ontario children will have to prove they've been immunized for whooping cough, chicken pox, and meningococcal disease before reporting for school in September. If you haven't had your shots, forget going to school. Wow. Pam Colleen, unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's becoming a war. It's becoming a war. Deb Matthews, poor Deb Matthews, I feel sorry for a crisis a day. Anyway, we're going to get to that major story in our next half hour. This half hour...
At the time, antivirals seemed like the best line of defense.
But if we wait for a pandemic to appear, it will be too late to prepare.
Governments relied on an analysis funded by Roche suggesting Tamiflu could reduce hospitalizations and complications due to the flu. For years, experts urged flu drug makers Roche and GlaxoSmithKline to publicly release all their clinical studies on the drugs Tamiflu and Relenza in order to independently assess their efficacy. The companies finally agreed to give out all the data, including many unpublished studies. And the results? Antiviral drugs reduced the duration of flu symptoms by only half a day.
Ryan, I am not being facetious. I joked last week that there are going to be people in our lobby waiting to meet Pam Colleen after the show to get her autograph.
Yes.
Let me give you another example of what this woman is doing. Okay, what do I have in my hand? I have in my hand a book. It is called The Great Bird Flu Hoax, written by Dr. Joseph Mercola with Pam Colleen. Now, interesting quote in that book. Let me turn to page 110. This is all about Tamiflu. How much money did the Canadian government, you know, and we're often talking in the news about governments wasting money on unbelievable projects like moving gas plants, $1 billion. So, Pam, you wrote this book in
2006.
Yeah. So that's 8 years ago. Here it is on page 110. Side effects of Tamiflu. The FDA's website says these symptoms are possible side effects associated with taking Tamiflu. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. In other words, you're sick and sterile. Things are coming out both ends. Bronchitis, stomach pain, dizziness, or headache.
What does that sound like, Andy? It sounds like the flu, doesn't it? It's a side effect of taking Tamiflu.
You wrote this 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now, let's go.
Oh, that's a big story. It's finally breaking in Canada.
And this is a story. You did the story 8 years ago. Now, in the last few days, it has been on the CBC. It has been in the Globe and Mail. And look at the cover. I'm holding the most recent magazine edition, McLean's magazine. The very first words in the top left-hand side, the flu drug fiasco, referring to
this scandal where the Canadian government has spent millions of dollars on this drug where it hasn't really been proven to be efficacious.
Not millions, hundreds mm-hmm. of millions, mm-hmm. 300 million.
Yeah, worldwide, billions.
And around the world, other governments did the same. You heard the clip of George Bush. I can't imagine how many billions were spent worldwide on Tamiflu.
Mm-hmm.
What's the verdict on Tamiflu?
Well, this morning we have an expert on the line to talk to us about the research, and we've had him on the show before. It's Dr. Tom Jefferson, and he's with the Cochrane Collaboration, which is cited in a lot of this recent media attention. Good morning, Dr. Jefferson. You're joining us all the way from Italy today.
Good afternoon.
Yes, it's afternoon where you are.
Oh, afternoon where you are. My goodness, you and Pam are rocking the boat on this issue, Doctor.
Well, it's not my job to rock the boat. I don't do that. I don't do what I do to rock boats. I just look at the evidence. In this case, we looked at all the available evidence from pharmaceutical dossiers, which had never been seen before.
Science Insider quoted you saying, "I don't like being made a fool. I trusted literature. I trusted people who were doctors and researchers. I trusted the archive. I trusted Roche." What happened for you to break that trust?
Well, in 2006, we did an update of our longstanding Cochrane review on this class of drugs, to which Tamiflu belongs, called neuramase inhibitors. And in 2006, we included a Roche-funded, clearly identified as such, meta-analysis of 10 trials headed by a person called Kaiser. He was the first author. And Kaiser and the second author were both consultants to Roche, and the rest were Roche employees, clearly identified as such. The problem with this meta-analysis, which was published in a very, very high visibility journal, was that there was, of the 10 trials, of the 10 Tamiflu trials in the meta-analysis, only two were published. And we took it at face value. We took 2006, we took it on trust, and we should have verified, and we didn't. We got picked up in 2009 by a Japanese reader. So we went back to the original authors of this meta-analysis and of the only two published trials, asking for the data so that we can verify it and answer the Japanese reader. And that the answer that we got is that they didn't have it. In fact, one of them told us they'd never actually seen the raw data. And in one case, or one of these two published studies, he actually hadn't written the manuscript. It was a ghost author who had written the manuscript. And the only people who appeared to have seen the data was Roche.
Doctor, you say you don't do this to rock the boat, but you are rocking the boat. Let me just read the opening paragraph from the Maclean's Magazine article. Listen to this, folks. This is your tax money. Not millions, hundreds of millions. Pick up Maclean's Magazine. Don't believe it just because you heard it from me. Don't believe it because you heard it from Pam. Don't believe you heard it because of a guy who has that unbelievable name, Thomas Jefferson. Here's the opening paragraph of Maclean's Magazine. Canada's questionable Tamiflu stockpile. With more evidence showing Tamiflu is not as effective as once believed, why is Canada stockpiling it? Tamiflu might be the most heavily scrutinized drug in the world, and one that governments have poured, and here's the figure, Pam, we were talking about billions, have poured some $9 billion globally to stockpile in case of a pandemic. You heard the clip from George Bush. However, authors of a new study published in the British Medical Journal this week suggest the influenza antiviral probably works no better than aspirin and possibly causes harm. Pam, a classic case of governments screwing it up.
Uh-huh. And you know what's remarkable about this story is that Maclean's Magazine actually confronted Public Health Agency of Canada to ask for the reasons why they've been stockpiling this drug, why they've been spending millions of taxpayer dollars on this issue. And they scrambled around, Andy. Public Health actually scrambled around to try to come up with information to present to Maclean's Magazine and even came back with redacted documents. Redacted documents.
Blacked
so they're
out.
Not, yeah, blacked out. So they're not being that forthcoming.
And you know what absolutely amazes me? Bryna Warshawski, congratulations on your new job. When did you ever warn us about this? You and I had a discussion about Tamiflu back in November. And obviously some people were listening because this story now being picked up by the Globe, by the CBC, and now front page Maclean's Magazine. Pam, take a bow. This is, I was secretly hoping you were wrong. $300 million just in Canada, $9 billion globally. Wasted.
Well, that's what it's starting to look like. Dr. Jefferson, one of your colleagues in this Maclean's article, Peter Doshi, makes a very profound statement. He says, public health officials have not yet learned how to be honest about uncertainty. They see uncertainty as a sign of weakness rather than a reality of science. Your comments on that statement?
I entirely agree. The main the main problem that we have is we don't have a problem with Roche. Roche hasn't done anything illegal as far as we can make out. We're not policemen, so we're not really looking for that kind of thing. But what we really struggled in the last 4 years, apart from getting the data from Roche and GSK, we really struggled with is getting some answers from decision makers, from public decision makers. For instance, Health Canada, two very good examples of WHO and CDC. They do not answer questions on, for instance, what was the basis for your decision? What trial do you look at? They don't answer. They stonewall. Now, the thing about the whole Tamiflu story is that if you want to go and read the correspondence between us and the regulators, us and my group and public health decision makers, you can actually go and do that on bnj.com/Tamiflu. You can read the correspondence, read the answers. It's all there. It's all published.
Doctor, let me ask you this. What upsets you most? You sound like a very even-keeled kind of guy. I'm more of a loud-mouthed, passionate kind of guy. But let me ask you, what upsets you most about this Tamiflu story to think that $9 billion, with a B, billion dollars, was wasted because we got caught up in this reaction to the Tamiflu scare, and basically, it would appear, may have wasted $9 billion. What upsets you most about that?
I'm not really upset. Since 2009, I don't do things the same way. I gave the person who wrote the McLean's article a quote which she didn't use. Is that my quote is that I've been Kaisered.
You'd been Kaisered?
Is the first author of the meta-analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe anything now. I don't believe in any anything which I read. I do not read journals anymore. And anybody who asks me to do a peer review of a trial, you know, when you send in a manuscript to a journal, I tell them I want the full clinical study reports, and I want all thousands of pages of it. I do not look at 10 or 11 page manuscripts anymore because I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know who's written them, and I have no guarantee in the case of a trial that whoever his name is on that paper, it has actually written it, mm-hmm. or has actually seen everything.
Yeah.
That's incredibly sad. What the doctor is saying.
Yeah, and I think one of the solutions that the scientists want, is for these companies to be more transparent. But how on earth is that going to happen, Dr. Jefferson? What do you think?
There are signs in Europe that this is mm-hmm. happening now. The Tamiflu story, which has been running in this vein since 2009, has been a sort of cause célèbre and a rallying cry. But there's been a change in legislation, in European legislation. From 2016, all clinical study reports of randomized controlled trials done on, obviously, on humans will have to be made available. Now, that is a great leap forward. The only problem with that, and it's very sad that we have a problem with such a leap forward, is the fact that it doesn't cover the past 20 years. So that the drugs that you buy today were drugs that registered like Tamiflu 10, 11, 12, 13 years ago. So that's not covered. Some companies, GSK and Roche, mainly under the pressure of the BMJ on the Tamiflu affairs, have come out with transparency statements with registers. They have lists of trials that they've done, and indeed both Roche and GSK have given us these big dossiers that we asked them for.
Uh-huh. But what's going to happen in the future to make them transparent? This is, I mean, there's in this article, they're saying that GlaxoSmithKline has pledged to become far more transparent. I mean, that, to me, that's just words. But are they going to actually follow through, though?
Well, I think that they should, people should follow that and keep questioning and so on. But what about these? But what about these public health decision makers and what about the regulators?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me just give you some idea of what I'm talking about. If you go and read our Cochrane review, you've got pages and pages and pages and pages of boring methods. You've got appendices, you've got lists, what we've done. You've got a whole package telling the story of the review. You have 170 pages of peer reviews. We've made all the clinical study reports, 2 giga worth of data available, and so on. So I ask you now, where are the methods that regulators employ to review new drug applications? I'm asking you because we couldn't find them. We looked for them on the FDA website. We looked for them on the EMA's website, that's the European regulator. We couldn't find them. So how do they decide? How do they make these decisions?
When they're sending articles that are redacted, that certainly should leave a cast of doubt among millions of Canadians.
Doctor, I have to ask you, after your earlier comments about getting so cynical about these medical journals and so on, who do you trust anymore when it comes to medical issues? And who should we trust when we go to the drugstores or even when we listen to our doctors about what effect the drugs are going to have that they're prescribing for us?
I'm in a very difficult position because you understand that the profound impression this episode's had on the whole of my outlook. I've been spending 20 years doing Cochrane reviews based on publications. Now I would say that if the publications are about drugs or interventions which have got little or no market, or which have got no patent, say face masks, I think the risk of anything going amiss is probably low, quite low. If organizational interventions, I think that's also. But anything which has got potentially got a market, and I regret to say, anything which is published on high impact factor, high visibility, prestigious journals, has to be suspect.
Wow!
I certainly, yes, I'm afraid so, because they are targets. The journals are targets and they're victims at the same time of a system. And I go beyond that. They also depend on pharma revenue for some of their very big staff.
What I hear you saying is eat 3 square meals a day, get lots of exercise, be healthy, don't get sick, and whatever you do, don't get yourself into a situation where you need drugs.
I would say that what you got to do is you got to question, you got to ask, you got to keep on asking, like we did for the last 4 years, always the same question, ask, ask, ask. If there's something that doesn't sound right, it's probably because it isn't right.
Doctor, wish we had more time. We have to wrap it up. We have to leave it there. Pam has a closing comment.
I think people should follow his advice and go to the British Medical Journal and look up Tamiflu. Like he said, you can find all the data there. And also you can look up Dr. Jefferson's Cochrane collaboration online as well.
Doctor, we thank you so much for your time this morning.
Okay, folks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Terrific. Wow. Unbelievable. It's sad how cynical he's become.
I know a lot of very cynical scientists out there, though.
You can't believe your doctor. You can't believe your scientists. You can't believe your government. You can't trust your government.
Mm-hmm.
And the government spends $300 million on Tamiflu.
And look what, Dr. Joel Lechkin, right? We've had him on the show before. He's featured in this Maclean's Magazine article as well. He's a York University drug regulator expert, and he says, it concerns me that an agency that's supposed to be out there to protect public health may be under political control. Political messages are not necessarily the same as public health messages, and if Public Health Agency of Canada is not seen to be able to be independent of government, then people will start questioning what it has to say. Powerful stuff, Andy.
Absolutely. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Deb Matthews, our health minister, deputy premier, yesterday being outraged. In fact, a quote about Jenny McCarthy, the TV star, suggesting there's a link between vaccines and autism. She says it's outrageously irresponsible. Outrageously irresponsible. When we come back, there's so much emotion attached to this issue because the Ontario government, and I'm sure you have full and entire confidence in Deb Matthews, and I can't think of more than 50 reasons why you shouldn't have full confidence in Deb Matthews. She is going to make sure that this fall, Ontario children will have to prove they've been immunized for whooping cough, the chicken pox, and meningococcal disease. And if you're worried about autism, well, you're just outrageously uninformed, you see. We'll be back to talk about Ms. Matthews and Jenny McCarthy. I want to share a lively debate Jenny McCarthy had on a TV show very recently. It's all coming up in the next couple of moments right after a short break right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
From 1994, we added 8 vaccines to our schedule. There are vaccines like flu, rotavirus, varicella that have only been picked up by two or three of the other 30 countries. So what do they know that we don't? Why aren't they picking up vaccines that have been around for 15 years? And why are their autism rates 1 in 1,000, 1 in 1,500, 1 in 2,000? It doesn't take a brain surgeon or an ER doctor to figure out there might be a correlation.
We don't want to narrow...
It's outrageously irresponsible. The science is very clear. The study she's referred to has been discredited many times. There is absolutely no truth in that argument.
Okay, so we have a clash, folks, between Deb Matthews, our health minister. Pam Colleen's been clashing with Deb Matthews for years. I don't know if Deb Matthews knows about that, that Pam Colleen has questioned just about everything she has said. But now, folks, this is a very real issue. Starting this fall, Ontario children will have to prove they've been immunized for whooping cough, chicken pox, and meningococcal disease before reporting for school in September. Now, John, we've got a guest. I want to go to her within 1 minute, but you have a quick comment, and then we'll get you to stay with us and comment on the other side. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. I just want to comment. Well, I got many comments, but Deb Matthews is outrageously irresponsible herself because you know that every drug out there has a side effect. And by her stating that these vaccines cause absolutely no side effects is outrageously irresponsible.
Thank you. You've bounced the ball back to her. Okay, we're going to put you on hold. Pam, we have a very special guest who is on a tight timeline.
She's joining us at the very last second, and she's an attorney from the United States, Patricia Finn, and her firm focuses on vaccine injury and exemption. So she is an expert in this area. Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us this morning.
Okay, so Patricia
Finn, yes.
Let me just push the button here, and we'll be hooked up with Patricia. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We know you're on a very tight schedule, and so we want to respect that. Go ahead, Pam.
Right. So your area of expertise is in vaccine injury and exemption. We have a bit of a different situation between Canada and the United States, but it sounds like here in Canada, they want to strong arm families into getting vaccines, which is a very similar situation to the United States. We have exemption forms here in Canada, but I gather you do not have them in the United States. So you're working hard to advocate for families who have been doing some research into vaccines and have their doubts.
Yes, and we have forms too in the United States, but the problem is they're often rejected, so it's somewhat meaningless. But in the United States, there are no mandatory vaccines that I'm aware of, but the coercion to vaccinate is so great, and the arbitrary denial of the exemption so troubling that, you know, people are being forced to vaccinate. And it's very, very dangerous because in the United States, you know, Congress has clearly recognized, as the Supreme Court has, you know, vaccines are unavoidably dangerous. People have a right to refuse. And that is indeed what we're working on.
Patricia, you've just made a very interesting comment that probably has upset a lot of people about vaccines being dangerous. Our health minister would call you outrageously irresponsible. Make your case for what you've just said.
Well, I don't really have to make the case because the Supreme Court in the United States has ruled that, in their opinion, that vaccines are unavoidably safe. In the United States, we've awarded $2 billion in damages to vaccine-injured people since 1986. And the fact is, vaccines do injure people. The focus of my work has been and continues to be, you know, an individual has a right to say no. And that is competing with Big Pharma. And, you know, Big Pharma is behind a lot of these scares. You know, all of a sudden, when we make a push to secure the rights of people to opt out of vaccines, all of a sudden there's a measles scare or, you know, a flu outbreak or something. And that data has shown to be completely untrue, even with the H1N1 incident here in New York State, which was a complete debacle. The government, the state of New York, tried to vaccinate all healthcare workers. Then we fought back. They withdrew the mandate and said it was a supply issue. Then after that, they burned $250 million worth of the vaccines they claim they didn't have enough of. So, you know, it's the information out there is troubling, and it's not reliable, and it gets very, very dangerous. And, you know, I'm not a doctor. I don't know if vaccines work. I don't know if they cause autism. I know the evidence suggests that there are serious problems. And, you know, that I talk to parents all the time who tell me their children were fine and then they got the shots and now they're sick. So it's what I do know as an attorney, that individuals have a right of bodily autonomy. They have a right of bodily integrity. And in the United States and Canada, we do not experiment on children. That I know. That I know for sure.
And the vaccine industry actually sets aside a certain amount of money on every vaccine in anticipation of being sued for injury as well. So they know themselves that the vaccine can hurt people.
And that type of no-fault liability creates a disincentive to produce a safe shot. I mean, if the manufacturer can't be sued, there's no market force to regulate the product. In the United States, if you could refuse vaccines and people stop getting them, the manufacturers will stop making them. But that's not what we have. We have federal preemption. We have no-fault liability. And if you're injured, you go into a special court. And that has been held to be constitutional. And I believe that is constitutional. The problem that I see is pressuring people to take the shots. People have a right to say no. You can have no-fault liability. You can have a vaccine court, and you can have every shot, you know, a few dollars put aside in a fund. That is constitutional. Where it is not is where people have religious beliefs or they have a due process right to refuse. And that's what I work on.
Patricia, really appreciate you joining us. We know you're on a tight time schedule. We just want to compare our situation to yours. Anything else, Pam?
I think people should go to her website. There's one more thing I think we need to hear from Patricia on, by the way. Her website is vaccineexemption.org. But, Patricia, you have a special case that you're working on right now that I know you want to share with the audience. So could you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. We have a little girl here in New York City that has been denied a medical and a religious exemption for vaccines. And in New York State, you can have both. You can have a religious and a medical reason. And Mary, little Mary Check, she's of all the children that want to opt out of vaccines. And, you know, we are so out-resourced and outmatched by Big Pharma. I understand they're now calling Dr. Paul Offit as an expert to oppose this little girl's right to refuse vaccines. Her doctor absolutely said she cannot be vaccinated. And we have a campaign right now, Support Mary's Rights, and, you know, we're looking for contributions and donations so we can fight back. And what we have done here is because we can't fight them on the science at this time, or at least I can't because I'm outmanned. But I can fight them on the human rights argument and the constitutional issues. And again, I repeat, in the United States, we do not experiment on children, and that is exactly what is going on here.
So just before we let you go. Just before we let you go, a word then to all those parents, and they'll be calling here in just a moment, who are very nervous about vaccines, who don't want to have their children vaccinated, a word of encouragement for them.
Well, you know, the statistics are most kids do fine, you know, when they get vaccines, you know, notwithstanding the assault on their bodies. You know, injuries are rare. I think they're very underreported. But if you really, you know, parents know, you know, if you have siblings and two kids in the family reacted, you know, adversely to a vaccine and then you're being forced to inject a third, you know, there's something seriously wrong there. And as a parent, you just, you know, in New York, we have a warrior mom movement. And basically, we're just refusing this type of intrusion over the body. And, You have to be strong, and we have to be organized, and we have to stick together and just preserve our rights. That's all I can tell you. And, you know, with blessings, of course, your children will be fine, and let's hope for the best always.
Patricia, so kind of you to join us. We thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was really nice to talk to you both.
Okay.
Thanks, Patricia.
Awesome. And she talked about fear. I mean, we mm-hmm. have had a chiropractor, I think, up in London, who went to Emerge here in London with his little boy for a minor ailment. And then mm-hmm. they asked, by the way, have you had your child vaccinated? He said no. And they said, well, then we're going to do it right mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. And he got into a major squabble, and they threatened to call Children's Aid and take his boy away
from him. We hear so many stories like that happening.
Okay. Now, John, we'll go back to John. John, what's your family story? You have a fascinating story.
So we have seven kids, and our sixth kid was a boy. All the rest are girls. And our boy has autism. And so we've been dealing with this for 5 years now. And I tell you, I've heard at least 100 stories from parents that, you know, we can't prove that vaccines cause autism, but they definitely bring on the onset of so-called autism. And there is no doubt about that. So there isn't just absolutely no doubt about it. And I plead with parents, if you are pregnant, do not vaccinate. And now what Deb Matthews is doing could be very disastrous, because if somebody goes to the doctors and has to get their whole schedule updated, that's just a toxic assault on these kids, which could be very detrimental. And I do not make this up. Everything I say is 100% the truth. I've talked to hundreds of parents. I've been to all kinds of conferences. Us parents do not make this stuff up.
Mm-hmm. No, you don't. I've talked to dozens of people.
And that's what's so outrageous about Deb Matthews. And you know why Deb Matthews and our Ministry of Health is doing this? Is because we're winning. We're actually winning the fight against the vaccine industry, that they have to push back and start mandating.
There's an incestuous relationship going on between industry and government, and government wants to look like they're protecting us, and the vaccines are a great carrier for that illusion, right? So here's the government basically endorsing vaccines and filling the pockets of these CEOs that are making, you know, $7, $8, $20 million a year salaries. I just don't think, Andy, that anybody working for the government intended for that to happen, but that's happening. They're doing the free marketing for the vaccine industry.
Bear with us. I want to share with you, because people may not even know Jenny McCarthy and what the position that she has taken on this. She, of course, is a major TV star in the United States. But let's share an audio clip. This is from a recent TV debate. Jenny McCarthy, Raw is how it's labeled, Ryan. I just listened to the temperature on this debate south of the border.
Here's one thing, Jenny, and you know I've got an open mind. Mm-hmm. But, you know, back in 1983, back in the 90s, you know, we did have children dying every week of meningitis. And you know, I remember doing rounds with my dad, and almost every day he'd need to go to the hospital and take care of a child that had some sort of vaccine-preventable illness. And, you know, with the increase of vaccines, we've seen a huge decline in some of the really nasty things that I'm so glad I don't have to deal with. You know, epiglottitis, meningitis, you know, a lot of pneumonias. You know, kids just aren't dying of that sort of stuff anymore. And as a pediatrician, that's the last thing I want to see, is for people to stop vaccinating, because we'll start seeing kids die of polio
again.
Okay,
let me tell you this. We do not need that many vaccines that we need. The chickenpox, I think, can be a parent's choice. The rotavirus. The flu shot that still contains mercury. JB, hepatitis B, go ahead.
The devil is always in the details. And one of the problems with vaccines is they've been so great that people overly generalize about them as if they're only great. We looked at other first world countries. We're 34th in under 5 mortality, behind such luminaries as Cuba and Slovenia. However, we have 36 vaccines. The top 5, which include countries like Finland, Norway, Iceland, average 11 and 13 vaccines. From 1994, we added 8 vaccines to our schedule. There are vaccines like flu, rotavirus, varicella, that have only been picked up by 2 or 3 of the other 30 countries. So what do they know that we don't? Why are they picking up vaccines that have been around for 15 years? And why are their autism rates 1 in 1,000, 1 in 1,500, 1 in 2,000? It doesn't take a brain surgeon or an ER doctor to figure out there might be a correlation.
We don't want to be too narrow-minded and say it's only the vaccines and ignore other potential problems.
In my opinion, and this is just me wanting to have an open debate about this, vaccines are really the one thing we have looked at as causing autism.
Yeah, I agree with you.
That is completely bogus. No, that is such a bogus statement. How many vaccines have they looked at in these studies? How many? What's the answer? It's two. How many ingredients have they studied of 35? What's the answer? It's one. You've looked at two of 36 shots and one of 35 vaccines, and you're going to stand on the stage and say that vaccines and autism are unrelated? It is the most bogus tobacco science. It's a smokescreen. Anybody who takes the time to read it would agree. I'm so sick of doctors who don't read the studies, who don't know the details, sitting here telling parents and reassuring them that vaccines don't cause autism. It is irresponsible.
And this is the biggest problem and the reason that, doctors...
Anyway, the debate goes on and on. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back to wrap it up, this discussion on vaccines, which is only started now, especially with Deb Matthews now announcing that her position is right and that of Jenny McCarthy is outrageously irresponsible. Back in just a moment here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJB. Only have a couple of moments left. I want to go right back to the phones. Kimberly, what do you make of this debate?
I am so hot, Andy, it's not even funny. My son has autism, and I wanted to say something personally to Deb Matthews. Jenny McCarthy's statement about this being outrageous is about as much bullshit as the doctor who told me that my son's autism was caused because I let him watch too much TV before he was 2 years old. If her doctors can't even figure it out, why rule anything out?
That's right. Good point.
Kimberly, what do you say to Deb Matthews after her statement yesterday?
I say that maybe she can afford the lifestyle she has because the kickbacks are pretty good.
You're that cynical.
I am. Oh. My son's medication is $600 a month without coverage. I'm wondering what she has to pay for her drug plan.
Wow. Ryan, let's play that clip of Deb Matthews. That's at the heart of all of this. She's referring to the studies that TV star Jenny McCarthy, who's become an anti-vaccine advocate, is referring to. Here we go.
It's outrageously irresponsible. The science is very clear. The study she's referred to has been discredited many times. There is absolutely no truth in that argument.
Okay, Kimberly, we're almost out of time, but you would say to Deb Matthews?
Bullshit.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go to John. John, go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a real quick question. There was a comment that was made earlier about Big Pharma holding off funds protect themselves in the event that they're sued for a drug that's a problem.
Right.
For a parent who makes a decision not to immunize or not to vaccinate their child because of basically all this back and forth and everything else like that, what legal recourse do they have if the child develops polio or diphtheria or any one of these diseases that have almost been eradicated and that child dies? I mean, what's their legal recourse at that point? Does Jay McCarthy or these people who are advocating, do they have some fund to set aside for the loss of
the assumption,
child or a
but the
child
assumption,
who's been crippled by this?
Yeah, but
Hang
the
on.
Assumption is, of course, that infectious diseases are rampant today and that we are just, you know, we're going to see people dropping out there like flies from infectious diseases. The reality is 100 years ago, before we found out about hand washing, before we had flush toilets, essentially before we developed better sanitation and hygiene measures, right? We had a 50%, you know, we had a 50% infant mortality rate from infection. The other issue is, of course, is that infectious diseases that we're talking about here, they were pretty much already on their way out before vaccines hit the market.
John, I wish we had more time. You can hear the music. We're almost out of time. John, you have another John now. What, you have a quick comment?
Andy?
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry, but yeah, final comment, there is no study out there on this full immunization schedule, so that's why Deb Matthews is fully wrong.
Okay, terrific. Okay, Pam, wrap it up.
Well, I think if people want to do their own research, there's lots of websites they can go to start educating themselves on this issue. National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org, is just one of many websites out there that are basically watchdogging over this situation. And, of course, the Cochrane Collaboration has done research on the flu vaccine and shown that it's not efficacious either. So there's lots of resources out there. People need to do their own digging.
Okay. And again, under the umbrella of Pam is always right. W5, our segment right after the 11 o'clock news. Another horror story from the factory farm. Pam, cover your ears.
Oh, I don't want to hear it. It's frightening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Veal calves and how they're abused. W5 will join us right after the 11 o'clock news right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.